says, إِنَّ تَصَوَّفَ شَيْءٌ يَقْذِفُهُ اللَّهُ فِي قُلُوبِ أَسْفِيَائِهِ. Tasawwuf is something that God thrusts into the hearts of those people of purity. وَهُوَ يُذَاقُ عَلَى يَدِّ أَهْلِهِ. And it's something that must be tasted at the hands of its people. So what he's saying, and this is Imam al-Ghazali who precedes him and is really one of the great formulators of this science. Imam al-Ghazali says that tasawwuf is really about dhawq, which is tasting. And the reason they use that metaphor for this science is because there are certain things that you cannot explain to other people. They have to be tasted. And Imam al-Ghazali uses honey as his metaphor. He said, if somebody asks you what honey tastes like, the best way to help him understand is to give him a spoonful of honey. You can say it's sweet, but it's not like sugar. It's not like fruit. It's a distinct thing. And even though honeys are very different, there's something that all honeys share in common that we place them into the genus or the genus of honey. There's different types of honey, but there's one genus. And so that's what he's saying, that this is something about tasting. And that's why the best way to taste this is to be in the company of its people, because you'll experience it from them. It's not something that you can really get from a book. A book can help you. It's like a map. But in the end, you have to take the journey. The map's a waste of time. Borges, the Argentinian writer, has a story about a Chinese emperor that wants an exact map of China. And so every map they bring him, it's completely inadequate. So finally, he decides to lay paper across all of China. So it's an exaggeration about the nature of maps. They're limited. They're always limited. You have to take the journey. That's the only way you're going to understand the terrain. You can read about desert, but you have to experience it. You have to see. You can read about a maha, but once you see a maha, you'll understand why the Arabs, you read maha, it's a woman's name. Why would they name a woman after a wild oryx?
It's a gazelle.
Oryx is a type of gazelle. Yeah. Yeah, oryx is a type. It's a specific type. That's okay. But why they would name after the animal, you have to see it. And once you see it, oh, now I understand. It makes perfect sense. And that's experience. That's the difference of experience and a kind of book knowledge. The Arabs say everything has a portion of its name. Like whenever whatever you give a child, yeah, that's why the Prophet said, choose good names for your children, because they'll get a portion of the name. And that's the nature of what name, the power of names. That's why the Prophet always changed bad names, negative names. So then he says, وَأَصْرُهُ نِعْمُ الصَّفَى وَالْوَفَى وَالْمَحَبَّةُ الصَّادِقَى مَحَلَّ الْقُرْبِ بِالْمُصْطَفَى. Its foundation is the blessing of purity and loyalty, of fulfilling your oath and promise. And true love, that is, and its place is in nearness to the Prophet ﷺ. So that's really what this is about. It's about those things that he described. وَأَمَّا تَصَوُّفْ فَلَهُ تَعَلُّقٌ بِالْقُرْآنِ. As for tasawwuf, it has a connection with the Qur'an. In other words, this is a Qur'anic science. And that's why what's interesting about this book and why I really like it is he took it entirely from the Qur'an. Because there's people that claim tasawwuf is something outside of Islam. They borrowed it from the Hindus. They borrowed it from the Buddhists. They borrowed it. And there's some truth to those elements. There's definitely, within some of the turuq of the Sufiya, they borrowed things from other traditions. That's just fact. But the science is a Quranic science. And that's why he wrote this book, to really show that.
لَمَّا وَرَدَ فِي الْقُرْآنِ مِنَ الْمَعَارِفِ الْإِلَهِيَّةِ وَرِيَاضَةِ النُّفُوسِ وَتَنْوِيرِ الْقُلُوبِ وَتَطْهِيرِهَا بِاكْتِسَابِ الْأَخْلَاقِ الْحَمِيدَةِ وَاجْتِنَابِ الْأَخْلَاقِ الذَّمِيمَةِ.
Because we see that in the Qur'an,
many divine knowledges have come, and also the disciplining of the souls, the illumination of the hearts, the purification of the hearts by acquiring virtuous character and by avoiding vice. So this, وَقَدْ تَكَلَّمَتَ الْمُتَصَوِّفَةُ فِي تَفْسِيرِ الْقُرْآنِ, and the Sufis spoke and interpreted the Qur'an themselves. So they spoke about tafsir al-Qur'an. فَمِنْهُمْ مَنْ أَحْسَنَ وَأَجَادْ وَوَصَرَ بِنُورِ بَصِيرَتِهِ إِلَى دَقَائِقِ الْمَعَنِي وَالرَّشَادِ وَوَقَبَ وَوَقَفَ عَلَى حَقِيقَةِ الْمُرَادِ وَمِنْهُمْ مَنْ تَوَغَلَ فِي الْمَعَانِي الْبَاطِنَةِ وَحَمَلَ الْقُرْآنَ عَلَى مَا لَا تَقْتَضِيهِ اللُّغَاتُ الْعَرَبِيَّةُ وَقَدْ جَمَعَ أَبُو عَبْدِ الرَّحْمَنِ السُّلَمِي كَلَامَهُمْ فِي التَّفْسِيرِ فِي كِتَابِهِ الَّذِي سَمَّاهُ الْحَقَائِقُ. So some of them made their own tafsir, and some of them sunk deeply into this and arrived at realities of the Qur'an, their desired realities. And among them are those who got, tawaghala is to really get stuck in esoteric meanings, and they basically attempted to explain the Qur'an in ways that the Arabic language does not allow. So they went beyond the boundaries. And he says, اللغات العربية, which is a plural. Because in tafsir, there are many ways to interpret a word. And the mufassir will look at the different ways. And one of the qawa'id of tafsir, the principles in tafsir, is that any meaning that is sound in Arabic and in accordance with the grammar, the syntax, and the rules of the Arabic language, and can be proven, is an acceptable interpretation of the Qur'an. As long as it's not a ta'wil ba'id, where something's just far-fetched, but if the Arabic, تَحْتَمِلُهُ الْعَرَبِيَّ, if the Arabic contains that, and it's not far-fetched, then it's an acceptable way of looking at that verse. And that's why you have primary meaning, secondary, tertiary meanings. So that's an important aspect of the science. And Abu Abd al-Rahman al-Sulami, he's one of the great scholars. He was born in 325. He wrote in hadith, in tafsir. He's very well known.